Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. For this episode, we have two interviews. First with Doug Tonis, recorded after the San Antonio victory. Believe it or not, that goes back, I think, January 22nd and 23rd. You know, that was still during the slide. And there are a number of topics that we discussed, timeless topics, about what's wrong with the team, etc. Still very relevant to what's going on today. Hope you enjoy that. Part two is an interview with Brian Crawford. I've been a big fan of his work over the years, and we had him on the show. Bulls expert and fantastic writer. You can find him also on Twitter, and we'll give you their handles during the show. We again discuss what's wrong with the Bulls, and it's a little bit more positive spin. Again, that was recorded before the Houston game. I think the night before the Houston game. After watching that game last night, I do have some serious concerns. I know the narrative is generally now, it seems like, among the fan base. The big problem here is Paul Gasol. Paul Gasol is the reason why everything has gone bad. All we have to do is send him to the bench and, relegate him to 25 minutes a game, and everything's going to be all right. We're going to win the title. We'll have the number one defense again, blah, blah, blah. Of course, that theory was kind of thrown out its head yesterday when at the end of the third quarter, the Bulls went on a fantastic run, arguably played some of the best basketball of the season for a few minutes when Gasol and Taj worked together to cut down the massive Houston lead with a 14-4 run. Some just excellent work on the offensive end. Gasol leaves to start the fourth, and now we have the lineup that everybody wants. Defense first, the four best defenders, the two best perimeter defenders in Heinrich and Butler, and the two best interior defenders in Noah and Taj. And Gasol is on the bench, and Noah can play his the five, Taj can play the four. Everything's going to be all right. And what happens? The Rockets go on a 13-0 run to end the game, effectively end the game. So we can all sit around as a fan base and say Gasol's the problem and read incredibly stupid and biased articles by amateurs like Kevin Farragut saying Gasol's this, Gasol's that, Gasol's the problem. The fact of the matter is there's three problems. I will admit Gasol is not the best defender. He is not an A-plus defender. You still can win a title with Paul Gasol. He still is a massive upgrade on both ends, since blocking shots is a part of defense. He's a massive upgrade on Carlos Boozer. Overall, he's not the reason the defense has had a precipitous collapse. Unfortunately, it's due primarily to the fact that Joakim Noah, God bless him, is half the man he used to be. Half the man he used to be on the defensive end, most importantly, and that was never more apparent than in last night's debacle in the fourth quarter, to begin there, when it was still a layup line, Gasol or not. And he just can't seem to get out or have the, he doesn't have the physical ability anymore. Sad, but true. I think the move to make is to bring Taj into the starting lineup, start Gasol and Taj, have Noah come off the bench, because Noah is better served, too, without Derek on the floor. Something no one is really talking about is how bad the offense it looks when it's run, the pick and roll with Rose and Noah, Noah on the court back at the elbow. It was fine last year without Derek, but now that Derek's there handling the ball, Noah can't draw the big man out of the paint. No one respects his jumper. The paint is packed, and Tibbs, foolishly, to combat this, is using Gasol as a stretch five. He's playing Gasol out on the perimeter, playing Gasol at the three-point line, and expecting his man to come out, which it does do to a certain extent, and which has worked a lot all year. Unfortunately, Gasol is at his best in the low post with Taj as a jump shot threat on the opposite side, or you can play high-low with both those guys, have Gasol sometimes come out. But all this talk about defense has ignored the fact that our offense is all of a sudden in January taking a precipitous decline, primarily due to the fact of Noah's 41% shooting during the month, Kirk Heinrich's inability to hit a jump shot, and his complete failure as an NBA player. He's not an NBA player anymore. These facts combined to just wreak havoc on the offense, and defensively, we've just failed at multiple positions. On the perimeter defense, which allows far too many easy drives, and attacking and preventing, you know, a layup line. It's a complete collapse of epic proportions. Your job as a coach, put your players in the best position to succeed. He's not doing that for whatever reason. Primarily because he cares about one side of the ball. Hope you enjoy the interviews. God bless you. Follow me at CBFred on Twitter. But this is a disgrace of epic proportions, because this team is far too talented to be playing like this. And eventually, maybe the fan base for once will say, hey, Tibbs, what's going on? What's going on?
This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009, and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
I'm not here around this week, but you may be, but I'm not.
You're hungry?
Hey, Ma, bring us some meatloaf.
You're insane. You're absolutely insane.
My house is
spread.
Are you telling me
49? I don't know what we're yelling about.
Now, if you don't think this is the greatest, I will fight you. That's no lie.
Can you clap for the killers?
All right, let's rock.
Give it up for them gangsters.
Throw them off the back.
One time for the killers.
Whoa.
Double up for them gangsters.
Just live in the dream.
I have been waiting. Welcome to Chicago Bulls.
I gotta be honest. I'm coming in like a little late. I'm trying to get my parents.
Okay. Doug, I'd like to get your, you know, initial thoughts about the downward trend lately. Obviously, last night was, return to excellence of something we're a little bit more familiar with, but there are obviously a lot of warning signs in the past, you know, 6-7 games. What do you think the primary reasons for the quote-unquote downfall have been, and do you foresee this continuing, or do you see yesterday's victory over the Spurs hopefully a sign that we're moving back in the right direction?
I think overall, you look at yesterday, they beat the Spurs, and, you know, who knows, maybe it's a couple days by the time we put this all together and throw it on the site. But you look at that win against the Spurs, and the Bulls scored 104. It's not so different than they scored in their most recent losses for the most part. It's just they were giving up 115, 120, 103, whatever it was. They're giving up tons of points, over 100 every game. And so this game against the Spurs, they gave up, I think it was 81 off the top of my head.
Yep.
And that's really the difference, right? So the defense played well. And so you look at where the Bulls were last year and what made them a capable team, but not an elite team, was they were tremendous defensively. This year they've improved offensively enough that if they have last year's defense, they're an elite team. But they're not such a great offense that they can just go and dominate everyone with just offense and no defense. They're nowhere near good enough. And so they still need to bring that elite defense. They still need to hustle and play with effort and energy, and they can't walk on the floor and feel like they're going to just beat teams. And I think the difference we saw with the Spurs is they really attacked it. And I think Derrick Rose was maybe the biggest difference maker there in the way he played and the way he stepped up his defense, which has been really poor, to be honest. And I think the way they used Taj Gibson in that game was a little different. I think they tried to minimize how much teams could pick on Pau Gasol and try to protect him and keep him closer to the basket and involved a little bit less in pick and rolls. And I don't think the Spurs ran as many pick and rolls, which has really been the play. The Bulls have historically defended extremely well and have not defended well in this recent downward stretch. And a lot of that is Joakim Noah's lack of athleticism this year. And right now he's just out. So I think those are kind of the main things to me.
So how concerned are you about Noah if he continues? I mean, what's your overall take on his play this year, you know, when he has played? And are you concerned that this is what we're going to see for, you know, probably the rest of his career?
I think he's been awful this year, and I think there's a good chance that's just is what it is. You know, he had knee surgery. He said he had knee surgery in, like, May. You know, we're in January. It wasn't like he tore an ACL either. It seems like from what Pau Gasol said in one interview, he said a meniscus is a tricky thing, and that was, like, the most we heard about what Joe actually had done to his knee. We don't even know what he did to the meniscus, how serious the tear was or anything else. Guys have come back from meniscus tears, obviously, and played well, so that's not something you think would be bad, but he's getting a little bit older. He's obviously a bigger guy. I am very concerned that this is just what you're going to get, because I think, you know, if he was going to heal, you'd have seen it, right? I mean, it's been like 6, 7, 8 months since, for an injury that should take 3 months. You know, it doesn't seem like, you know, that's going well. It certainly doesn't seem like it's going to get a whole lot better while he's playing. You know, so I don't know. I'm very, very concerned for sure.
So I'm starting to sense that you feel there's limitations on this team based on what I've read on your blog and your show. Limitations are on this team that you don't think it's likely they're going to win a title this year.
Well, I think the whole league is pretty wide open this year. And I think we've talked, and we saw what the Bulls can do when they're playing well against the Spurs. And so they clearly, when they're playing well, can be an elite team. And it really comes down to, can Derrick Rose consistently be an elite player? Or can Joakim Noah step up and be an elite player again? Or can both guys be really good again? And so Derrick Rose, I think, has steadily been improving. I'm actually pretty impressed that he's kept his three-point shooting streak going. I think it's like over 5 games now. He's shooting 51% or so over the last 5 games. So that's pretty impressive. So if Derrick Rose actually can continue to play like a star, and if he can play well defensively, I think they can still overcome Joakim Noah not playing as well as he did in the past. They do have a lot of big man depth, and the East just isn't that good. And so if they make it to the finals, you know, I still feel like they can get out of the East. You know, not that they're a heavy favorite, but if I had to pick one team, I would still maybe pick Chicago ahead of the other teams. I mean, Atlanta's got this great record, but you look at the roster and you don't think like that's a team that necessarily is going to have staying power. They don't have tremendous strengths, really. They don't even have that much depth. I mean, you just kind of look at that roster and you're like, how are they even doing this? And so Toronto and Washington, you know, they're also good teams. Toronto, honestly, doesn't scare me even the slightest. Washington, I think, matches up tremendously well against Chicago, so they scare me a little bit more in a head-to-head matchup, but I don't think they're a super great team. They just match up really well against us. But I still think the Bulls can come out of the East. I think, like, you know, maybe out of there's maybe 5 teams that have a shot to come out, you know, Cleveland and then the Bulls and the 3 I just named. So of those 5, I'd say the Bulls are maybe a slight favorite ahead of the other ones, but it's pretty much a toss-up, I guess. I don't think Toronto has a good chance, but maybe a toss-up between the other group. So, you know, and if you make it to the finals, I think the Bulls are an underdog, but even if they're an underdog, in worst case, they're like a 2-1, right? And then they have like a 1/3 chance of winning if they get there. You know, and you look at the West, and anyone could come out of the West. I mean, that's completely wide open. So it's an exciting NBA year. I mean, I think anyone can win.
All right, I got a question for you. I've been obviously a harsh critic of Thibodeau. I think he's a fantastic defensive coach. I think in some other aspects of the game and people management, there are some limitations, and I don't think he's always gotten the best out of some of his players. It is readily apparent with Kyle Korver, who I joke around now. I don't believe he'd be starting with the Bulls. I think he'd probably have Heinrich or someone ahead of him. But that said, if the Bulls lose in the first round this year, let's say we have another disappointing playoff exit, are you ready to say, hey, maybe this guy isn't our coach for the future to get us where we need to be? Maybe he is, you know, a rich man, Scott Skiles, excellent coach, but just can't get you to where the promised land. You know, I often compare it to Doug Collins. He reminds me a lot of Doug Collins, who was a fantastic coach, got us pretty far, but didn't get us where we needed to be.
So I think people put too much on the coach. I mean, usually it's basically talent. If you were coaching the Lakers back when they had Shaq and Kobe and you didn't win, I'd say your problem was the coach. If you're coaching the Miami Heat over the last few years and you didn't win, your problem might be the coach. you're coaching this team and you don't win, I don't know. I mean, it really depends. If they're fully healthy and they get knocked out in the first round, I think that'd be really disappointing. You know, unless they end up in the 4-5 matchup with Cleveland, you know, you could see that being that's a toss up. Whoever in that 4-5 is going to be a toss up. But if you played anyone else and lost in the first round, that would be a tragedy. You know, if you lost to Cleveland in the first round, you'd be really upset, really disappointed, but you'd kind of feel like you lost to a similar caliber team, a team with maybe more star power and team maybe built to do better in the playoffs than you were. You know, I don't know, but I don't think you're going to find a better coach than Thibodeau. People will always use this backup quarterback syndrome, and they'll always say things like, you can't win a championship with this guy. And I think a lot of times it's just not necessarily true. You know, I hate that argument of, well, this guy won't do this for you. You can't win a championship with this guy, because there's countless worse coaches who've probably won, who just had superior talent. You know, they'll say you can't win a championship with Dunleavy as your starting small forward. But if you go look at, like, some of the guys on, like, those Lakers championships, you know, who started with them, they're, like, scrubby players outside of Shaq and Kobe. You can win championships with weaker links. And Thibodeau, I think, is a top five coach in the league. Yeah, I agree he has some flaws. I agree there's some things I'd change. But I think sometimes perception also isn't fair, in that we perceive these weaknesses of his, and we don't give him any credit when he does change. You know, he's got this, reputation of being balls to the wall all the time. And in his recent losing streak, he listened to his players and he gave them a day off when they had this 2-day stretch when he originally would want to practice and make them work harder. And they responded. And so he did make a change, you know, and he just subbed Heimrich out of the starting lineup and put Tony Snell in. I mean, right now he doesn't really have a lot of options. I think he's maybe a little bit more flexible sometimes than we give him credit for. And some of the things he did when it was his first head coaching job, in those first couple years, like starting Keith Bogans and stuff like that, like we still, that's so visceral in our minds that we won't give him credit for the positive changes he has made. I just don't see anyone better out there. I mean, who would you even get if you got rid of Thibodeau?
Well, no, I agree. I mean, it's hard to say, but, you know, you find a guy like Mike Buttholz, or, I mean, who would have talked about that guy, you know, 5 years ago, right?
But, yeah, that's true, but nine times out of ten, when you look for that guy, you find someone far worse. You find Vinny Del Negro instead. You know, I mean, for every guy who comes up like that, or like Steve Kerr, who's having a great start, you know, then you've also got Derek Fisher, who's with the Knicks. You know, I mean, every time you take a chance on a guy that's a total unknown, you're getting a total unknown. And you're a team that maybe you have after this year, the Bulls have maybe a 1-year window to be a title contender, depending what they do. I don't think you take a shot in a complete unknown with like a 1-year window. I think Thibodeau is going to coach this team until this team's window is over. And I think that's like 2 years. And two more years, you'll kind of see where you're at with Derrick Rose, see if you want to re-sign him. Joakim Noah is probably going to be gone. Paul Gasol is definitely going to be, you know, over the hill at that point. You know, you're going to be, Taj Gibson, I think, will be like 32 or 31. I mean, you're going to be looking to rebuild the entire team. I mean, maybe you trade some of those pieces ahead of time and bring in more things. Who knows? But it's going to be a period where you have to do some major refactoring. And I think at that point you start looking at, okay, is it time to bring in a new coach? You know, Thibodeau's contract will be up. You know damn well the Lakers or the Knicks will pay him like $10 million a year when he's a free agent. And if you're not ready to win a title right away, I figure if you're the Bulls, you probably pass on that. You probably say, we don't need to pay a coach $10 million a year while we retool the team for 2 or 3 years. It's just no coach is worth it while you're going through that rebuilding period. And then you kind of look to start over. So I think Thibodeau rides this thing out with the team for as long as they have a championship window, and I think that's only this year, next year, maybe the year after that.
You know, I guess I don't have as much of a problem with him now that management's kind of stepped in and imposed some of these limitations on him. I still think, you know, last year it still bothers me this day that, you know, Noah averaged almost 40 minutes in the final 10 regular season games, and then he looks as bad as he does in the playoffs, and afterwards Tibbs says, well, he's been bothering him for, you know, 3 months. Well, then why are you playing him 40 minutes per game in the final 10 regular season games? It's complete insanity to have the pedal to the metal all the time when the model that wins is Greg Popovich, where guys are taking every other night off.
Greg Popovich wasn't that guy. Greg Popovich played Tim Duncan into the ground early in Tim Duncan's career. I just think, if you look at the Bulls right now and you look at their minutes per game this year and you compare it to like any team in the Bulls championship era, like, you know, like the number one guy on the team in minutes, number two, the number three down the road. It, like, maps almost exactly what Phil Jackson did, like, almost to the minute. So I just – and that's, like, with some of the very veteran Bulls teams. You know, we're like 35-year-old Michael – 35-year-old Michael Jordan was playing, like, 38 minutes a game.
It's 20 years ago, though, now. I mean, it's like a whole – it's almost another era. It's, you know, in 20 years ago, guys were closing far more games in baseball. I just think, you know, the game's kind of moving on from that, right?
I don't think so, except for the Spurs. I don't think – if you look at the other teams – I mean, I haven't done the research, so I'm just going off the top of my head. But my guess is if you go look and see, like, how much – like Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook were playing when they were healthy, you know, per game, I think you'd see something similar, that those guys were playing like 37, 38 minutes a game.
Absolutely.
I just don't see, like, it's not like this year, Jimmy Butler's playing like 39 a game. He's playing a ton of minutes, right? But who's like the next guy in the team? Like maybe someone playing like 35? I mean, that's just not crazy. And is Butler playing like two more minutes a game over an entire season really that big a deal? I mean, these guys are probably practicing four times as many minutes as they're playing in a game. You know, I mean, if anything, I think I would be more concerned with how hard they're practicing, and we don't know that, really. Because if you're wearing yourself down in practice, that's a big deal, too. I mean, you're probably practicing four times as many minutes. Your practices are a couple hours long. You know, you and I aren't professional athletes, but a 40-minute workout in one day, four times a week, even if it's extreme, is not a tremendous workout for a guy who's in this type of condition. You know, the fact that he's also doing these two-hour practices and all this other stuff, you know, it all does add up. But I don't think the difference between 36 minutes and 40 minutes is that big a difference on his body, even across the whole season.
Yeah. I mean, Gasol at 35 minutes, I think, is too much. I don't think he's...
I agree. I'd like to see Gasol play less. I mean, we've seen him be more effective when he's fresher. And I really don't, you know, like it sometimes when he's on the court for, like, you know, huge stretches in a row. I mean, I think he needs more breathers. I would agree. But I just think that's like really a micromanaging type of criticism. I mean, I agree with you. I just, you know, I think you got to find a guy who would, you know, do the exact minute rotation you want, but then he would be lousy at so many other things that it wouldn't even be close to making a difference to having Thibodeau, who's good at all these other things.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I mean, you know, that Sheridan article that came out, regardless what you think of Chris Sheridan and his work, you know, he had a couple points in there. You know, Bulls, after four games and five nights, Tibbs calls a practice. The team was incredulous, couldn't believe it. I believe that. I don't think that's made up. I think that's exactly what happened. I think people have said he practices this team hard, and that probably had a lot to do with why they had success, because you had a team that was like a college team, a younger team. Most of these guys are over 30 on this team. This is quickly a veteran team. You know, Noah's over that age where you consider him young now. Same with Taj. You just got to – I don't know. I hope you're right in that, hey, he's adopting his ways. He canceled practice on Tuesday. You know, now we're going to start seeing a more player-friendly type of guy. But, you know, I question if that's going to happen. And
here's the thing. This team has been lazy as shit on the court. I mean, let's not pull any punches. They've been lazy. They've been low effort. They haven't been doing anything. So it's really hard for me at this point when you're playing lazy basketball, no effort, I don't give a crap basketball, to side with the players and being worked too hard in practice.
Yeah.
If you're bringing it every day, you know, then I might be like, yeah, you know what? We need to tone down the practices. But when you're not buying in and you're being lazy and you're not doing your job, then you need to shut the hell up and work.
Is that lazy, or is that, you know, I'm tired? Is that lazy, or...
It's freaking lazy. When you walk onto the court and you're being lazy in your first minute, you're lazy. You're not tired in your first 5 minutes in the first quarter. You're just lazy. Yeah. That's low effort.
I don't see it as much as... I don't see that. During this losing streak, yeah, there's been times where I think they don't look like they're giving maximum effort. I think a lot of it has to do with...
It's not even close. I mean, last night they did. Last night they came out and brought it, and you saw a big tangible difference. They closed out on shooters. You know, Derek was getting into the paint. You know, they were really pressing on both sides to make plays and execute and step up their intensity. We have not seen that out of a lot of guys. So, it's not like it's been all year. It's been up and down, the level of intensity. But over this losing stretch, it's been really down. And so when they're playing bad and they're not really look like they're focused or intense, I'm not going to side with them in a battle of, oh, I'm being worked too hard. You know,
yeah.
I
just don't buy that. In general, I think there's a narrative that Tibbs has done, you know, miracle work with a very team of average talent. I don't buy that at all. I don't. I think this team's far more talented, and, especially on the defensive end. Guys like Taj Gibson and Jakeem Noah. The key to having
are you just going to rip on Tibbs this whole podcast and get anything else to say? I mean, even if you don't like the guy, he's not a bad coach, right? Like, you admit he's top 10? Would you say that?
Yeah, I say he's top 10. No denial.
Okay, so, I mean, he's top 10. So why are we spending 20 minutes trying to figure out, like, if he should play Jimmy Butler 3 minutes less a game and Pau Gasol 2 minutes less a game? It's like,
fair
it's
enough.
Crazy. It's just complete micromanagement of something that's irrelevant. Over a whole season, it's 160 minutes, but over, like, 6 months, 160 minutes of exercise. I just don't see that as a factor.
Good point. Fair enough. I got time for one or two more questions that I want to ask you. Number one, and thanks again for taking the time to chat with me. Number one.
Of course.
You're the new GM. I just bought the team. I fired Pat Scar. You have the team as is. Do you make moves? Do you stand pat? And what would you do if you do make a move?
So I would probably lean towards standing pat. I mean, you never know what moves are available for you. So it's kind of tricky to say, yes, I would make a move. Because, you know, of course, if you can make a move that improves your team, I think you do it. I think what I do is I wait up until the deadline, and I look and I see how my team is playing there. And if Derrick Rose has shown me level of play kind of similar to that Spurs game on a more consistent basis, it doesn't have to be every game, but, like, say, instead of once every five games, it's once every two games, and I feel like I've got a really good chance this year, then I maybe start considering whether I want to package, you know, a couple draft picks or McDermott or Dunleavy to make something happen. The problem is I'm really concerned on this team. You need to trade McDermott or Dunleavy really to kind of, like, get enough salary to bring someone back because they don't really have any good trade pieces. And so if you do that, you're losing the only two guys on the team who have some possibility of being good three-point shooters and really spacing the floor for you. And so if the guy you bring back isn't that type of guy, I think it's a problem. And like I said in my last podcast, Dunleavy is maybe not as much as Korver, but he's a shooter that you fear. I mean, teams fear Mike Dunleavy as a shooter. You could bring in Aaron Aflalo. He's not a shooter anyone fears. His percentage might be similar, but that's because you'll leave Aflalo and see if he'll hurt you. You know, Dunleavy, you're not going to leave him to see if he hurts you because you know he'll hurt you. He gets shots off anyway and then still gets a similar percentage. And so I think they need a fearsome shooter out there. I think we've seen them really hurt without Dunleavy. And because you can't bring in another, there's really not any type of guy like that available, in my opinion. And so you could bring in Kevin Martin or Aaron Aflalo, and maybe those guys upgrade you in some ways, but I'm not sure that you need guys who are a little bit better off the dribble or better volume shooters. I mean, you need a guy like Dunleavy who's a specialist, who spaces the floor without ever touching the ball. And, you know, so I just don't think they have the right pieces to make a move that really is going to move the needle any. You know, I don't think if they had a guy who was like a dead salary, like a $5 million dead salary guy, then I think you could trade that guy in a couple of first-round picks and bring in Aflalo or Martin or Wilson Chandler or something like that, and it would really help the team. But you don't have any dead salary guy you can move to bring that guy in, and so now you're going to lose something for whatever you get back. And because of that, I'm not sure that the Bulls have something they can afford to give up.